Om Namah Shivaya. Dear listeners of Shaivam.org, the next program is Spiritual Discourse. In this, you are about to listen Shiva Purana. The title is Questions and Answers, presented by Swami Jyotir Mayananda. Thank you. Om Namah Shivaya.
Now we commence with offering a stotra. शुभंचाक्षर स्तोत्र नागेन्द्रहाराय त्रिलोचनाय भस्मंगरागाय महेश्वराय नित्याय शुद्धाय दिगंबराय तस्मै नकाराय नमः शिवाय. He who is adorned with a garland of snakes, who has three eyes, whose body is besmeared with ashes, who has directions for his clothes, all that implies he is beyond all layers of illusion, who is eternal, pure, and the great God, adorations to that no aspect of Lord Shiva. Each verse has been created on the basis of Namaha Shivaya. So first starting with Na, Nagendra Haraya, Mandakini Salinchandhan Charchitaya, Nandishwara Pramathanath Maheshwaraya, Mandara Pushpa Bahupushpa Supujitaya, Tasmaina Makaraya Namaha Shivaya. He who has been bathed in the sacred water of Mandakini and anointed with sandal paste, who has been worshipped by Mandara blossoms and other beautiful flowers, adorations to that Lord of Nandi. Nandi is the bull, which has two implications. Nandi comes from bliss, ananda. Ananda is his vehicle. Another implication known as he rides on dharma, righteousness. The Lord of Prabhatganas, all the attendants of Shiva, they are the subtlest source of the entire universe. Adorations to that God of gods, the M aspect of Lord Shiva. Shivaya Gauri Badanabja Brinda Suryaya Dakshadvaranashataya Shri Neelakanthaya Vishadvajaya Tasmai Shikaraya Namah Shivaya. He who is the embodiment of auspiciousness, who is like the sun to delight the lotus face of Gauri Devi, who is the destroyer of this sacrificial performance of Daksha, whose banner holds the insignia of the bull, adorations to that beautiful blue-throated she aspect of Lord Shiva. Vasishta Kumbhod Bhava Gautamaya Munindra Devarchita Shekharaya Chandrarka Vaishwa Naralochanaya Tasmai Vakaraya Namaha Shivaya. He whose head has been worshipped by sage Vasishta, Agastya, Gautama and other great sages, as well as by Indra and other gods, who has moon, sun and fire for his eyes, adorations to that va aspect of Lord Shiva. Yaksha swarupaya jatadharaya pinaka hastaya sanatanaya divyaya devaya digambaraya tasmai yakaraya namaha shivaya. He who has assumed the form of yaksha, who has matted locks, who holds pinaka, special type of bow, in his hands, who is the eternal and effulgent being, who has directions for his clothes, again same implication. Adorations to that your aspect of Lord Shiva. Panchaksharamidam punyam yah pathet shiva sannidhau shiva lokam avapnoti shivena sahamodate. Whoever recites this sacred hymn of the five-lettered mantra of Lord Shiva in the presence of the deity. How can you do that? Please, in the satsanga atmosphere, in your puja room, anywhere. He abides in, such a person abides in Shiva Loka. That's what in liberation. Enjoys eternal union with Shiva. He attains moksha, liberation. Let me give a little changed mode of questions from you.
So, we would like to open the floor to questions. Gurudev has requested questions, so if you have a question, please raise your hand and Priyanka will bring you the mic. please be sure to speak into it loud and clear. Any question is welcome.
Om Tatsat. Om Tatsat. Om
Tatsat.
The demons ask for immortality as well. And I wanted to know how it's different from the immortality that Shiva represents.
Demons want everything that good people want. But their attitude to things are different. Things are their possession. They are not enrichment. Just like you. That again is a subtle psychological point. If you are only working for having possessions, not your focus is not on whether you are going to relax with your possessions or become enriched internally, then the demon within you is the highlight. On the other hand, if sattva develops in your mind, you want things and they are important because they enrich you internally. Then it becomes a divine development. You still want things, but not as something just remains like a big basket on your head. Suppose you are carrying a basket and you want people to give you gifts. Someone gave you 50 mangoes. Saw 50, are so happy. But you are not looking at your neck. It's pressuring on your head. So that type of desiring process is demonia. On the other hand, when the proper attitude develops, there are four purusharthas, dharma, artha, kama and moksha. When you are on a divine track, dharma is highlighted. Dharma cannot be ignored. It's only on the basis of dharma. That's why Shiva writes on the bull, dharma. First comes dharma. On the basis of dharma, you create your material resources. Dharma is a spiritual, say, ethical value that determines what is right, what is wrong. Artha is material value, things that you need, and that must be in accordance with the dharma. Dharma, artha, kama, fulfillment of your desires. Your desires also have to be in line with dharma. Otherwise, you are creating karmas, your desires are leading you to increasing bondage. You have bangles all over. You are desiring to have more bangles. But with dharma at the basis, your desires are to be free. You want the bangles and all that, but not tied to a chair. The idea is allowing your desire to have a different implication. Desires that allow you to have internal experience of expansion. And to be able to waft the fragrance of your spiritual progress. And that type of desire, fulfillment. The other one, just desire that's just normal for human beings. Vitteshana, going after wealth. Putreshana, having progeny. Lokeshana, having fame. Only that mind is gripped by only this type of desire. While the mind goes after this desire, we'll go one step further. And then lastly, moksha. Moksha is infinite value of life, the highest attainment. Soul realizes, I am that. You are no longer a reflected sun in a bucket. You are out. The sun shining in all the buckets. And not that also is just allegorical. So that's it.
Namaste, Swamiji. Swamiji, I was wondering if I make a resolve that I want to attain moksha in this lifetime, and I follow like integral yoga, japa, meditation, and I did my best, you know, to get liberation. And for some reason, I can accomplish it. When I go on, say, like to Brahmaloka or to the other dimensions, can I continue the quest without having to take another embodiment in this world process?
Firstly, mind should not have that type of stress. You must realize a child has met the mother, and still both are not at home. But once the mother is there, security of child to return to the home is perfectly secure. In other words, you don't calculate in your mind, if suppose I don't attain liberation in this life. You must realize you are in the hands of God. If you didn't, you will be born, you will be born with all this setup of things that will allow you to remember all that you have done before and go further. In the Gita you read, but of course Arjuna had the problem, and Krishna says such a person can be born in a family of the rich. Buddha was born in the family of the rich. Before his being born as Buddha, he had done a lot of practice previous life. He didn't attain liberation. Now he attained it. Likewise, next type of possibility, you're born in the family of Mahatmas. There again, if you have become already advanced in your sadhana, now you will not be drawn, your mind doesn't need material resources. Family of rich is not important. Could be, but doesn't matter. Family of Mahatma, people who are devotees, born in a family where parents are devotees and you have all the possibility of listening to Upanishads, Mahabharata, etc., etc., all. And third possibility, if you have already attained a high level of purity, not being born, but that is called gradual ascent, krama mukti, without going through any other embodiment, but nature takes its own course. Cloud has become saturated with light. Now the cloud doesn't have to worry how long it will take to become vidya mukti. It will dwindle. It will all vanish.
So
the basic point is, a sadhaka, any aspirant, should simply go on doing sadhana and becoming more and more resigned to God within. The resignation to God, feeling that you are being guided by God, and your effort to become more and more attuned to God. If that is secure, who cares? Birth and death.
Okay, so just secure.
Mm-hmm.
Just secure.
That's it.
And everything else
in one place. Because God is not an ordinary, you see, you can't.
So if I look at moksha here, I'll probably get it.
To ordinary parents, say, did you remember? You gave me the car, but you didn't give me the key.
Thank you, Swami. I'll keep advancing God-wise.
Correct.
See what happens.
He gives you a car, he will give you the key also.
Swamiji, could you please detail the different types of nourishment in the story of Subramanian?
You are relating to Subramanya. Okay, let's see. The six Kirtikas, Prabha, Abha, these are all different aspects of, using in another terminology, the different aspects of Virya. If you have Shraddha, faith, the faith brings you to another level called Virya. Virya means you begin to express, radiate from yourself a special energy. That energy has different aspects. Those aspects have different names. Human success, for example, say successful. But success to different people means many things. To one person who is weak, his success means he has become healthy. One who has been poor, success means he has become more, his poverty is reduced and getting rich. One who has been dull, he becomes, mind shines. And as a spiritual aspirant, one who has been in a lesser level of sadhana, feeling good, but not feeling better. You need nourishment to feel better. Just being good is trouble. Everything is relative. Simple way people say, person who practices spirituality, his face shines with Brahma Tejas, a special presence of God as if radiates from your face. Now, scientifically, you start measuring that you will not succeed. But the inner enrichment with the spiritual experience, deep fulfillment, inner peace, touch of God, that creates a special aura around your personality. That aura aspect is described as the Kirtikas. Their names themselves, Prabha, the light coming from the sun as the sun rises. Abha, the light that shimmers. Abhas, things begin to reflect. Tej, the light that is not just illuminating, but chilling. The rays of the sun, simply they just don't illuminate the earth, don't move the darkness away. They kill countless disease-bearing bacterias. Again, we're speaking allegorical language as well as scientific language. Similarly, spiritual understanding develops within you that goes on killing thousands of negative radiations from your mind. Bhavya. Bhavya means you made a house and house is coming to completion and it has been well decorated and painted and all is about. Look at that, how bhavya it is. Different levels of accomplishment. Shobha. Shobha is a general term. Satyam, Shivam, Sundaram. Something that is, how wonderful, how beautiful. Sukriti. Anyone who is having spiritual expansion or spiritual growth, his conduct, his actions, thought, word and action, all these will be have a different implication. They will be like the breeze of the spring season, helping every tree to grow. Vasantavat lokehite charanta. That's the highest ideal of fame in our scriptures. Want to be famous? Become the spirit of spring. That's it.
Thank you.
Namaste, Swamiji.
Yes.
You taught just now the stotra that had all the letters of Om Namah Shivaya.
Yes.
What is the name of the stotra?
Shiva Panchakshara Stotra.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And it's in any of the books here?
We have Shiva Sahasranam that contains it.
Okay.
You have to let them know that.
Okay. Thank you so much.
I have a couple of questions. One is, what is the significance of 21 number in Ganesha's puja? And the second one is, the idea of moksha is moving from wave to ocean or multiplicity to unity. Does really one feel that unity and experience that unity? Or does one feel lack of multiplicity? When I wake up from dream, the Triputi is gone, but I'm not aware of Triputi is gone. And now, who is the one that is going to feel that unity? So I should I have that object of feeling unity, or should I not have that objective of feeling the unity because I must disappear myself?
Yeah, all these are great questions, but let me give you some points. When you focus your attention on dream, this point has to be understood that no matter how wonderful the dream, you are not restful. A greater rest will come when you become awake. A greater, not absolutely restful, because you are still in a dream world. But at least you have a certain understanding of difference. Dream world is very similar to the world we live in day by day. And in dream, your mind can work in two directions. Towards the practical reality of the dream world. In dream, you may have the problem of fixing your roof, making the house better, getting another story done, or many other things, or removing something negative. That's one way of working with your mind to improve upon your dream situation. The second one, which is moksha. The first one is working in the world with the karmic basis, sakarma. Pravritti. The other one, moksha. But while your mind is working upon awakening, still certain aspect of your mind is involved in handling the practical reality of the dream world. You are up on a tree like a monkey and you suddenly develop in your understanding it is a dream. Nevertheless, you won't jump out of the tree. So, likewise, the idea has to enter in the mind of everyone that no matter what type of life you live, your goal is to wake up, spiritual awakening, uttishtata, jagrata. But waking up is a subtle, spontaneous process. Because as long as you are dreaming from a dream point of view, waking cannot be understood. It can be felt. You feel that you have to wake up. But you can't describe. In other words, if you are practicing sadhana, mind should not have that problem. Am I understanding liberation? it is just like if you are on your bed and mind develops the question, am I sleeping? And if I am sleeping, how will I know I am sleeping? Questioner is ego. That, to that ego there is no answer. But that doesn't leave you empty, because you are empty with your ego. Moving away from your ego, you are full. However, that fullness is a matter of progressive spiritual progress. And spiritual progress is not simple. Sometimes your mind and your whole personality may not be very joyous about it. You have to work with asanga. But during that time, the nourishment comes from the matrikas. And if you continue with satsanga, etc., then there are sudden moments of revelation. Just like suddenly you go into deep sleep, everything moves away from you. And you don't wake up to say, how is it? Everything moved away. I worked so hard. Your experience of letting everything move away itself was your tremendous attainment. It's okay, continue. So, the idea is, any spiritual movement is going to give you a type of thrill that you are not aware of. A thrill that will not, that becomes even much greater than your being with the body. Even the idea of leaving the body behind becomes little. Until then, the movement must go on, without creating in the mind a problem. If I become liberated, then I have to feel completely quiet. There should be no problems. It's like you eat and food automatically goes on doing its job. You move and automatically the divine process goes on changing your unconscious, allowing your consciousness to expand, breaking down layers of illusion. And all these are not ordinary things for human mind to figure out and start working upon it.
Thank you, Swamiji.
You talk about liberation samadhi, and there's no more thoughts, there's no more waves. But yet, even though when someone's liberated, someone can fall back slightly with karma. Could you explain this in terms of the seven stages of samadhi, some prajnanati?
No, first to understand, that's wrong. Anyone who is liberated cannot fall back. But anyone who is falling back, is moving towards liberation, has not attained it. If you have attained liberation, you become like the sky in the midst of clouds. Liberation is not becoming just the sky without clouds. Liberation in life is, the picture of liberation is sky with all sorts of clouds. Only before liberation, you were not pure sky, you were a patch of blue. As such, presence of cloud has created always agitation. Good clouds make you happy. Negative clouds, they choke your neck. Patch of blue expands, contracts. That this stage of soul working for liberation. Now, in another stage, as you advance, you are same patch of blue. But now you have understood, if you could allow the clouds to have less opacity, the clouds have less denseness, how wonderful it will be. So you create Shubha Vasanas, good karmas. Good karmas, the clouds become so thin that even though as a patch of blue, suddenly see yourself expand into infinity. That's experience of samadhi. But again you shrink back to your patch of blue. And because there is other negative clouds around, now there is a question of this Devasur Sangram. The Asuras coming from one side, Devas coming from inside. Can I ever be liberated? But a profounder insight, that's Vedanta gives you, I am the sky. Stay a patch of blue, but with the deeper revelation, I am the sky. So from a patch of blue state to the absolute state of I am the sky, build up stages, and that's called krama mukti. You are gradually moving towards it. If you are on this way, you are not going to go back, so you may call yourself liberated, but don't expect all the joy of liberation.
Thank you, Swamiji. I know that my goal is to awaken spiritually, and I know that difficult people around me, particularly family members and close friends, who are negative, I look at them as angels sent by God to help me in my spiritual growth. But as a result of working with my spiritual life, sometimes I feel like it's time for me to move on from the people around me who are not working spiritually to get better. And I deal with feeling guilty sometimes, or feeling like I'm on my way, but you're not, and I'm not going to stick around any longer and be, you know, smothered by the negativity. And I just want to know about not feeling guilty about my spiritual progress compared to those around me.
That's a state of your sadhana and your sensitivity, which is good. The people who don't have any idea or any type of feeling for others, who cares, let them go to hell. I'm going to liberation. That's third class. But if you are moving towards that feeling, that means you are progressing. But you are in a level what is called good, but you have to become better. Better means people and their karmas are not your responsibility. If you push something beyond one's ability, even though it is extremely good, the person will be tortured. Things have to come according to their karmic process. So, just as it has been with you, how God is leading you, they are all being led. But to the extent God has put you in conjunction with them, to whatever extent, do whatever you can within your capacity. Beyond that, don't get your mind involved.
Nam Swamiji, can you please explain the six heads of Kartikeya one more time?
There are six attributes of God. Bhagavan, that's why. Bhagavan, Bhagavan Vishnu, Bhagavan Ram, Bhagavan Krishna. While they are called Bhagavan, the six attributes, six great qualities that exist in infinite measure. First, jnana, wisdom that is infinite. Next, vairagya, absolute detachment. That means there is no raga towards the world of maya. Next, bal, omnipotence, immense, infinite power. Next, kirti, being famous, fame. Next, shri, prosperity. You have to always understand prosperity, all types, external, internal. And Aishwarya. Aishwarya is glory. Infinite jnana, infinite vairagya, infinite bal, infinite kirti, infinite shri, infinite Aishwarya. These six go to form the description of God. Sagun Sakar God has all these qualities.
Swamiji, occasionally one of the demons comes from one of the absolute, the gods, Shiva or Vishnu, rather than coming through the dynasty of demons. Could you explain a little bit more about that? I get kind of confused about why that would happen.
Story writings are always limited, you see. Puranas and the stories you read, they are always limited. They cannot be perfect or cannot be rational. Second point to understand that, even so, demons and their demoniac world has come from God. God has created it. There is nothing good or bad that has not been created by God. Generally the question was, someone asked yesterday, why God has created evil? What? First to understand, evil and good are relative terms. When we say divine and demoniac, they're relative terms. Just like you need day and night, you need both for practical evolution. And let me further elaborate. At any stage of your life, you need challenges. Anything that challenges you and puts you into trouble is viewed by you as demoniac. And it is demoniac if you don't face it well. But if the trouble had not come, you will not have any strength within you. From the very babyhood, the world has been so created that the baby has to always find something challenging. Baby has to fall and then lift up, get a little hurt, but learn from it That's where the growth comes. If there were no evil in the world, will there be this satsanga? If there were no evil in the world, will there be Jesus, Buddha, great Mahatmas whom people so much love and adore? If there was no Ravana, where will be Rama, sleeping in the Milky Ocean? Evil and good, they are justice. Energy in two aspects. When energy is flowing in your house in a correct way, all bulbs are working fine. But when there is short-circuited, the demon has come in. There is nothing demoniac, nothing positive. Like, all is divine, absolute.
Swamiji, in the beginning you said, if you start seeing God as a possession, God will go away.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate a little bit of the possession?
Possession means your mind views God as someone like father, mother, and people whom you have been dependent upon, a big personality who can care for you. So therefore, you want to create a kind of relation with God. Oh God, I'm useful for you. You should like me. I will do all this for you, and you must care for me. So that's called the ego relation. That's what I mean. Putting ego's hand on God. Because that way, even so, it is good. Sadhana is the beginning stage, kindergarten of the spiritual movement. But as you advance, you begin to understand that God is that presence. Quieter I am, better His impact on me. And it is that presence that you begin to understand, not my will, O God, your will. Even though these things, what I think, are the best for me. But I know that my mind is just a foxy mind. So don't fall for it. Give me what's the best. And that comes by your surrendering to God. So you understand that God is the moving force behind you. You are not the one manipulating it. You allow God to manipulate you. Turning around, that's where subtlety lies. And that happens again, automatically. That also should not be a problem. Am I practicing devotion and bothering God? Okay.